somewhere.
So. Sorry about moving, but with everything they've got going over there, I'm good set up.
No, we'll let you slide.
Safe, am I safe or out?
You're safe.
I think we'll go to number 10. The two supervisors wanted to talk about it, neither are here right now, but the emergency restraint chair.
Sure.
Thank you.
I'm not sure what they wanted to talk about. So we have an emergency restraint chair in the jail. When an inmate is resistive or is a safety hazard to themselves, other inmates, or our staff, we have a chair that's on wheels. They are made to sit in that chair. They're strapped with their hands, legs, thighs, and I believe chest. And we monitor them while they're in that chair. We let them out for breaks if they're calm enough to do that. We negotiate with them to get them out of the chair as soon as we can. Mostly it's used for inmates that are suicidal and out of control. Or if a person is being resistive and we can't get them to do what we need them to do. The most recent event with Mr. Blake involved him being arrested at a protest. He was booked into jail, refused to say anything. He refused to do anything that the officers asked in the booking area. The booking process involves time. So the booking area is open with holding cells all around it. And in order to go into one of those holding cells unsupervised, well, not unsupervised, but by yourself or with other inmates, we have to take certain items from you. Those items include shoes, shoelaces, belts, hooded jackets with strings, and a few different clothing items. Now, we do that because we want the inmates to be safe in those cells. Being arrested can be very stressful. Sometimes people are under the influence. We don't want them to hurt themselves or hurt the inmates who are in that holding cell with them. Mr. Blake, when he was booked, he had a belt and a hooded shirt, sweatshirt, and shoes. And the staff negotiated with him, and he would just simply not respond. The staff asked him if he was going to resist if they tried to take those items from him. He simply did not respond. So the next option, because we can't stand there in the middle of holding with him and negotiating with him for hours and hours, is to make it so he's safely handled. So the option was, if he's not, instead of fighting with him to remove his clothing and remove his belt and remove his shoes, the easiest option and the most likely not to cause injury is to put him in that restraint chair. They escorted him to the restraint chair. He sat down. They strapped him. He was in the restraint chair and placed in a holding cell. He slept. He chanted. He sang. He was in the chair for, I believe, 7 hours, but he was removed. He's checked on every 15 minutes. He was removed and allowed to use the restroom. And then placed back in the chair because he still would not respond to us. Finally, I believe at 7 o'clock in the morning-ish, he agreed to be booked. He gave us his name. He posted his bond and was released. So in the corrections world, failure to do something, failure to do what we're asking you to do is a form of resistance. And we don't want to fight with people. We don't want our officers getting hurt. We don't want to hurt somebody. So this is the least restrictive measure. Even though it seems very restrictive, it's the least restrictive measure to handle somebody who's completely uncooperative. So I guess that's our explanation for the emergency restraint chair. That's our explanation for the event that happened at the jail on the night of the protest. And our jail is, just for an example, we have a new medical care provider and a psychologist, because it's very hard to find mental health people in this area. They flew in a mental health person from another...
Atlanta.
Works in the Atlanta Fulton County Jail or something like that. He was talking to our staff and he started crying because we treat our inmates so well up here. Seriously. We don't beat people up. We don't put them in there for no reason. We do everything the least restrictive possible. Our supervisors enforce that. So this guy's a great guy. He's worked in jails his whole life. And he can't believe how well our staff treat the inmates that are here. So if anybody has any questions about that chair, I can answer them.
Supervisor Norton, then you.
Okay.
Go ahead, Supervisor Norton.
Is it a metal chair, wood chair? I mean, it's designed to do that? It's just not a chair that's been altered to...
No, it's padded. It comes from a company. That's okay. The intent of that chair. It's got padded straps. Medical checks the person to make sure the straps aren't too tight, to make sure they're not in any distress.
Does it have any type of heart rate monitor or breathing monitor or anything on it?
No,
if you leave for 15 minutes, you know, and something happens, obviously.
Correct.
That's not the intent, but
no,
like I said, under stress or under any type of influence or anything, it, you know.
There's no electronic detachments.
Okay.
And here's kind of a photo of one of our, this is the training manual, and that's what the chair looks like.
Excuse me.
So if somebody's fighting and we need to move them from cell to cell or move them closer to the bathroom so they can get out, it's got wheels so we can lift it up and dolly the person over to that area. If we need to clean the cell, if we need to get them out, move them. We have a couple of them so we can move them from chair to chair. It's and like I said, when they're placed in that chair, they're placed in our observation and holding cell, so they're monitored by camera, as well as every 15 minutes they're checked on to make sure they're okay, to see if they want to get out. It's their choice. If they want to get out.
So my question then is, every 15 minutes, is there a document?
Yes, it's logged.
Officer so-and-so was in at this time, checked them out 15 minutes later.
They actually log their name, the time,
okay.
What the inmate's doing.
And there's other evidence other than the saying that they did it, right?
Correct. Well, that whole area is monitored.
It's all monitored.
Video camera.
Okay.
The officers have body cameras now.
Yeah.
And as well,
that's what I was
going to
say. Yeah,
there's video in the cells.
Okay. All right, thank you.
I believe when Supervisor Rose mentioned this at the larger meeting, he was bringing it up from a case law potential liability aspect, looking at what's happened in other areas. And it does feel like, and just as a layperson, everything about this is, I mean, even the actual name is emergency. And when the research I've done, it's very much about, forgive me, it's like being put in a timeout. I mean, in that you're at risk, and even yourself said, you know, it's about if someone's at immediate risk to themselves, to other people, that it's meant to prevent that. And the situation you're describing sounds different than that. And if his being in that chair was predicated on a risk because of his shoe, you know, once he's in that chair, could you not remove the belt and the shoes? If that's the risk that is...
Well, their arms are strapped down, so you can't remove their clothing while they're in the chair.
See, the hoodie you mentioned you couldn't, but the shoes and the belt you could have removed.
Could have, yes.
Okay. Some other policies I looked at other law enforcement had also, in addition to the 15 minute, they had a scheduled official medical check. Like every 4 hours, it would be an EMT. They would check things. Yes.
I brought Sergeant Simpson with. He's the administrative sergeant. He's got 28 years in our jail system. He's kind of our policy expert.
Okay.
And everything, so I'll let him answer the medical.
Upon placement in the restraint chair, the inmates are always screened by a medical professional, qualified practitioner, so an RN, LPN, or an NP. So, and then periodically, every 2 hours, when there's restroom breaks or water breaks, they're assessed again every time they're placed back.
By a medical professional?
Yes, yes.
Finished.
They're
okay.
Checked for capillary response. It's extensive. Mm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What would most likely, or I think the only reason why anything could lead to liability then, is there any kind of discernment that's made between this is the example you were using, Mr. Blakely, this is defiant, this is obstructing through omission, as opposed to, okay, this is somebody who's got a heart condition, this person's having a stroke, whatever the case may be, hypothetically, is there ever any risk of not discerning the why, what may be perceived as oppositional behavior is in fact something, I mean, the county wouldn't have paid out, or it's insured, $500,000, I think Supervisor Rose said, or more at the last meeting. Is there something that would preclude you from being able to identify what the reason is? Is an LPN as qualified as an MD as opposed to somebody who is, don't take this as an insult, but a deputy or a sergeant?
Well, all of our correctional officers are trained first responders, so they can check every breathing circulation, bleeding, gross deformities, and then tag off to the next level of medical profession. LPNs, RNs, are higher qualified, EMTs would be higher qualified than that, but they're not there to be medical professionals. I want to be sure that I answer your question, so.
Well, I'm not sure what would, if all these precautions are met, I don't know what would have led to a payout of $500,000 then. There must be something that, is it during the screening process that may have accidentally,
so
at the one in a million case, been?
No, it's case law that Supervisor Rose quoted that was national.
I thought it was something local that he was.
No,
he was national.
It's national. It's other, yeah, okay. Other jurisdictions.
All right. So
we sparingly use this chair. It's for.
This isn't a punitive. It's not a punitive measure at all. It's a preventative,
safety.
Protective,
yeah.
Safety chair. It's actually written in the policy that this cannot be used for any type of punitive or motivational, you know, tool. It's not for that. It's strictly protective safety to keep people from hurting themselves.
And so you're always distinguishing between this person's having lapse of an epileptic seizure and being non-responsive, therefore not deserving of the, excuse
well,
me,
the
chair,
medical
whatever.
Medical screening comes in.
Okay.
There's an immediate medical screening as soon as they're placed in the chair, and that would be, if they were having some sort of medical episode, the medical professional would be able to determine whether or not it's defiant behavior or a medical, you know, episode.
And to segue off and answer your question even more thoroughly, the level of resistance that I saw was bookended by two different levels. So you have someone who's having that medical issue, they're unresponsive, they're not capable of any psychomotor resistance at all, they're unconscious, so they're in a coma, they can't resist. Then you have your non-responsiveness, which is primarily what I think we saw in this particular instance. The next level of resistance in that continuum is dead weight tactics. So this would be someone who's laying on the ground who won't even do what this gentleman did, which was walk around, willingly go from one location to another. And there's 10 levels of these resistance, all the way up to, you know, a weapon trying to kill someone is the top level. So.
At any time, did you periodically ask him at breaks or at checks if he would comply with removing the items you had asked
yes.
him to remove,
yep.
and you received no response?
Through the night, he was asked, take your belt off, we'll let you out. Take your, if you cooperate, we'll let you out.
And nobody ever attempted to remove it from him?
No.
So two questions. How long do you think it would have taken him to get booked had he not resisted?
see, it was 7 hours before he decided.
Well, 11 o'clock at night during the week, probably he would have been out of the jail within an hour, okay. hour and a half.
And then what do you have?
Estimate. I yes. can't guarantee.
No, no, that just that makes good sense. I understand. And then what do you have in place, real specifically, policy-wise, for people who might be experiencing mental health episodes?
Well, we would always involve, there's an extensive mental health screening process during the intake, and also available at any time during incarceration. Of course, if there's a mental health professional there, we're going to involve them in this process. But even with someone who has some acute mental distress, we still are obligated, you know, ethically and by law to protect them from harming themselves. So, oftentimes you'll find people that are under the influence of drugs, alcohol, or are having some type of acute mental illness issue that end up in this chair. And we try to get them stabilized and out as quickly as we can.
So as far as policies, we have three or four policies regarding mental health and how to deal with people who are having mental health episodes. How to screen the inmates, how to react to them when they're having an incident in the jail involving their mental health, and we follow those policies. We do not deviate because we don't want to have a $500,000 lawsuit because somebody hurts themselves in that chair.
In that chair, sorry. Mention of the chair in that policy?
Yes. Okay. There's mention of the chair there's a whole procedure, and then there's our use of restraints policy, which covers the chair.
Because I know that in the Sheriff's Department, they do participate very regularly in the CIT, the CIP trainings.
Yes.
And if anybody doesn't know what those are, just outstanding trainings, and I just want to commend you guys for really being a part of that. It's so beneficial to our community.
And I didn't bring up that psychologist to say, oh, look at us. It surprised us because, you know, we're working with these people all the time. And when he said that, it spread like wildfire because our staff really do a good job. And it's, you know, it's a stressful workplace.
So how often is this used for more, because what you described is more of it's passive resistance. It's not the violent. So how frequently is it you, like if I were to come in and I were to you were to, you know, I would, if I were in that position, I said, I'm not taking my shoes or my belt off. How frequently is it used for that versus someone who is having some sort of a substance induced episode or, because I think that, go ahead.
This incident
mm-hmm.
it's a rare application.
More often than not, our staff is extensively trained in professional communication. We're going to try to talk to you and talk you and to frame it better for you and explain the process to you and allow you to make a choice as to what happens. We're really not determining, hey, this guy does this. We're responding to whatever level of resistance or aggression we see. So it's more responsive, and we'll explain that to people. We have
right.
extensive training and certification for our officers in professional communications, and this is just one aspect of it. So,
but unfortunately, it's a very publicized aspect, right?
Well, I think the unique part of this is that most people, when they come in, have been identified to some point, right, by the time they actually get into the intake area. And then we have what's called a FAST ID, and that's it checks if you've ever been incarcerated before. You're in the Wisconsin system, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but there was no return on that. You didn't have any hard ID on it. And so at that point, there is no, I mean, other than did somebody know that it was Mr. Blake? I wouldn't know what he looked like. I mean, personally, but
I'm not questioning. I'm sorry. I'm not being disingenuous, but so. No one, I believe you, but you're saying no one knew that was Jacob Blake's uncle?
But we have to positively identify.
I get that, I get that, but.
Oh yeah, this is Facebook.
And they treat the same as everybody.
I get that, but I think.
That's not how it works.
Okay, all right.
But what I'm saying is there's no positive identification of this, in this case, in this individual. Working the road for 10 years, right? I probably had one person that I couldn't identify by the time I got to on some sort of, you know, again, whether they told me a name and then it matched the physical descriptors, that's good enough, right? At this point, in this case, there was no speaking at all. There was no talk. There's no back and forth. He didn't identify himself. Nobody in his party identified him. So.
And we also don't want to get goaded into doing something.
Can you elaborate on that?
Somebody that's high profile that comes in and is trying to get attention, we're not going to buy into that.
Kind of like, too, if you made the wrong ID, then you'd be criticized for that
ID
as well.
Imagine the publicity if we would have tried to take his belt off and he fought with our officers and there's a pile of officers on top of him because we tried to take his belt off. Yeah. All that stuff is running through that supervisor's head as he's doing that booking.
And that's why you follow procedures.
Should I take his belt off? Should I unbuckle his belt? If he raises a hand and an officer perceives that as a threat and all of a sudden we have to throw him on the ground and he gets injured in our jail. All that goes through every officer's mind on the road. It goes through every officer's mind when they're doing these bookings. And those officers knew what this was about.
So I feel like there were two... I feel like Supervisor Rose's comments were less about this individual incident and more about the use of the chair. I don't want to speak for him, but when you brought it up. So to that end, could we receive the policy, the use policy, and then have him, so we close the loop with that, get that back to Supervisor Rose? Okay.
And of course, without ID, that would be potentially false arrest.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know who it is, or if you have
he was booked
multiple.
In as John Doe.
Okay.
You didn't know.
Yeah.
It was, you didn't know who it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, yeah.
Until he tells us who he is.
Yeah.
You know? And we have criteria we have to use, and, you know, it's all of, you know, all that stuff is going through. The officers that arrested him. Oh, crap. This is... Why? And then they put him in the car. And what if something happens to him in the car? And then we beat him up because he's Jacob Blake Dunkel. And then they get into the booking area and something happens in there because we're just trying to make him safe to go into a cell. It's all that stuff is going through that supervisor's head and he doesn't want to get blamed for that.
And were body cams in place at that time yet or not?
But there's surveillance footage of the entire incident.
All right. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you for coming in.
Body cameras is on the agenda as well? Policy?
No.
No.
We passed it last meeting.
We're changing it.
I know.
Okay.
It has not come back to us.
Okay.
So that may be next month.
Right. Motion to adjourn.
We aren't there yet.
Well, hold on. Any other business allowed by law?
Okay. Now I know where he gets his.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Using governance?
Aye.
Committee?
There you go.
Aye.
Now you can do
it. Who's second? Wait, thank you.
Yeah, you got it. I got to go to the other meeting.
I think most of us are.
Jerry, you going to it?
Yeah. Uh-huh.